is a Saturday Night Live Friday speaker meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous held at Westgate West in San Jose, California on March 6, 1998. Our speaker is John Mack of Hollister, California. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL tape library. Please observe the tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
This is John McCracken.
Hi, everybody. My name is John, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
That's right. My name is John McCracken. I have a sobriety date, and my sponsor taught me it's pretty important for you to have a sobriety date if you're going to be a part of AA. My sobriety date is December 28, 1990. I wouldn't have been able to stay sober a day, let alone 7 years, 3 months or 2 months, and, you know, 5 days, I guess it is. Seven, is it six? That's my sponsor. But I've been thinking about this meeting. I'm not going to lie to you. I'll tell you what, you know, when Ron asked me to chair, I thought a lot about what I've learned in AA, the people that I love in AA. All of the gifts that I've received because of AA, the relationship with God that I've developed because of AA, and anything and everything that's positive in my life that's connected to me today is because of my relationship with AA. And if you think that I'm lying to you, check this out. See, when I got to AA, I owned a blanket. I was living with my mother. What are you laughing at? That's the truth. I showed up in AA. I was coming off a pretty bad run. And I had many, many, many good men and women in AA come to me 10 years prior to December 28th. And they'd look at me and they'd say, you know, you probably should not have drank. You know, bad things happen when you drink. And I would always look at them and say, you people are weak. Why don't you just step back? You know, I don't need you. And I did that continuously and unregrettedly for 10 years. I had my first drink when I was 9 years old. It was simple. My brothers were my heroes. They were the guys I looked up to, but I was continually separated from them because of age. One was like 14, 15. I was 9. I had another brother that was 20. I had a sister that was 7 and another sister that was 5. Nine and 7 in between those two girls. And I didn't want to hang with the girls. I wanted to hang with the guys, but I was too young. Well, they're locked up in our bedroom, which we all shared together, and they won't let me in. So I go to my dad's toolbox, and I get a skinny screwdriver, and I slide it straight through the lock, and I pop the lock, and I pop the door, and there they are. They're drinking Oli and twisting joints. And I look at them, and I go, I'm telling, you know? I'm telling. And, what are you laughing at, man? It's serious shit. Felony's being committed, you know? And, I had my brother Kevin look at me and say, come on in. It was the first time he had ever said that to me. And I came in and I sat down. He said, you want a beer? I said, sure, I want a beer, you know? And I had my first beer. Wasn't too much to it, but you know what? I was never born, you know, a sipper where somebody goes like this. What do you think of President Clinton? You know? I never did that. I never did that. I spilled it down the front of me and shook it around, you know? You know, and, you know, and I started that way, and that's the way I was taught to drink. Well, there were 6 kids in our family. My dad was truly an alky, and a perfect example of one. But I want you to know, I'm not the adult child or anything. You know, I'm just an alcoholic. You got to drink to be a drunk. You know, I want you to know, I'm not an alcoholic and anything. It turns out I'm just a slime bag, dirt bag, gutter snipe, down, dirty, drunk, okay? I just take anything that makes me see double and feel single, you know? And that's what I love about alcohol and drugs is it can take you to both places pretty much at the same time, you know? So, anyways, That was my first drink, and it wasn't too much about it. I didn't get caught or anything, you know. But I can't tell you that once I had that first drink, I wanted another. And my brothers were different. They would drink hard, like they talk about in the big book, and they say, you know, this guy might be a heavy drinker, and this guy might be a true alcoholic, right? Well, my brothers were heavy drinkers. They'd get out there, they'd bust them down, they'd get in brawls, everything else, and then they'd step back and say, hey, we got to go to work. I don't get that. See, when I drink, I say, I can get another job. Right? So, you know, I don't know what to tell you. That's the kind of drunk I am. So when my parents, my dad was an entrepreneur and he was pretty successful at it. He got a deal where we all had to go to Ireland, and he said, you know, honey, we're going to go look at Ireland. We'll leave the kids here. They'll have a house sitter, whatever. And as soon as they left, you know, we told the house sitter she could have the rest of the week off. And we threw a party. And the party was Saratoga High School, Monta Vista High School, Lynbrook, Cupertino, Prospect. Everybody's invited, right? And we had 8 kegs, 2 live bands. I'll never forget it. Jack Martin was sitting there playing. I think we even had, like, a little cameo appearance from one of the guys from the Doobie Brothers. A big party, you know? And I can remember, I'm sitting there with a guy named Randy Roach, and he's showing me how to do, you shake up the beer can, and then you pop the bottom, pop the top, I don't know, and then it just sprays all over you, and then you do a hit of hash oils, and then you go back to what you were doing, you know, do a shot of whiskey. And, I'm glad you guys are laughing, because this is funny, man. You know what, I want to also share something with you. Do you hear the laughter and everything that we're doing here tonight? That's the magic of AA, you know. That's what we all thrive after and what we chase. Don't mess it up. Fall in love with it, because that's why I come back to AA. So, there I am, and I'm listening to Randy Roach. He's going, no, twist it a little tighter, but not too tight, because you got to get the smoke straight, you know. I'm doing all this shit. And then, so I get to the point where I've done too much, and I don't know about you guys, but there is a certain limit where you're there. And I can remember looking at him, and I'm going, I got to go to the bathroom. And I can remember walking down this long, skinny hallway and getting into that bathroom and grabbing onto a plastic sheet, you know, the shower curtain, and going, up. And over I go, and I hit my head in a blackout. And I come to maybe 15, 20 minutes later, and there's 3 gorgeous cheerleaders splashing cold water on me, and I'm naked. And I'll tell you what, that's where my incomprehensible demoralization came from. You know, I was like, son of a bitch, you know. So I made a commitment, and I kept the commitment. I will never black out again. Ever. I'll tell you what, when it comes down to that fourth step that you have to write, that's a bummer, you know, because I never blacked out. I remember everything, you know. But I'm not going to bore you too much with my drinking history. But let me just share with you, I'm supposed to be here tonight, and I'm grateful to be here sober in front of you tonight, because they said it couldn't be done. They said that guy is going to die behind his alcoholism. That's the way I was diagnosed coming out of the Navy. That's the way I was diagnosed when I go to AA meetings and go, nope. That guy's pretty much helpless. Gonna miss him, right? Well, by the time I was 18, I'd gone to Ireland and come back with my family. We had a successful trip, but while I was in Ireland, I focused on alcohol because there were no drugs available. So I drank Paddy whiskey, and I drank Guinness, and I drank Harp, and I drank Bass, and I drank Watney's. And believe me, I never shortchanged myself. I always gave it my undivided attention. You know, I've never met a real drunk that says, that's it for me. Got to go home. A real drunk looks at you and goes, you going to drink that? You know? Or a guy that's sitting at the table and he's down to the last line. And it doesn't matter, man. You go, you going to snort that? You know? I mean, I don't know what to tell you. That's the kind of drunk I am. I just... anything, but anything that's available to me that's going to make me feel anything other than what I'm feeling, I want to take it. So get back from Ireland and go to school at Saratoga High School. I want you to know that I was a success there. I graduated with a grade point average of 1.28. and some of the people in the room tonight here can verify that. You know, I can also tell you that through this time, I found out that I was a participant to the three phases of drinking, and I was in my second phase. In the first phase, there's nothing but fun. Fun. The legs are long, and they're available, and they're all yours, and you can't crash and burn because it's just not in your vocabulary. And everybody's offering. You know, that's fun, right? And I had that. And then when I got to high school, there was a little thing where it was like fun and trouble. You know, I can remember when I was a senior in high school, the dean's looking at me, and he's looking at my grades, and he's looking at my attendance record, and he goes, you might want to think about the what's the test you take to get out?
GED.
See, I'm not edumacated. So the guy's sitting there trying to talk me into that, and I said, you know, I want to go all the way. I want to graduate. But I was always in trouble for attendance, and I always had the police trying to figure out where the drugs were coming from. But I gave all the drugs to the girls, and they'd deal them for me, and then they'd bring back the cash, and I'd pay them. Like, how are you going to cash me? You know? But they're always trying to figure it out. Now I'm telling you. So my parents were disappointed because my grades were low. I was in trouble a lot. But I always backed it up with, hey, doesn't really matter as long as I do well in college, you know. Well, you know, I was a hell of a sports guy, you know. I played water polo and football and basketball and, you know, did really well at all that stuff. But it was funny. It wasn't as important as getting loaded. Well, if you're an alcoholic like me, what I do with my life is I take all my potential, all of the spirit that's been given to me by God, and I believe that that is the gift from God, is to give you the breath of life. Take all of that. Take it all. You take all the love that's been given to you by all of your family members, even your connected friends, close ones. You take it all, and you push it right up on the table, and you say, nah, I'll tell you what, you have this, just give me the drink. I trade all of it just for one more drink. And, I did that for not a day or a week. You know, I lived my life like that for a long time. And I pray that the guys and girls that are in this house tonight, I pray that's the way you drank. Because you'll miss the message if you didn't, you know. You might. Because when I got to AA, I had to be extremely desperate for me to even be willing, completely willing, 100% willing, to do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Bob, 20 years sober, dying of cancer. He's at the 20-year convention. He's in a wheelchair. His body's riddled with cancer. They don't think he's going to make it up to the podium, but he gets up there. And he hangs on to each side. And he looks out at the crowd and he says, in the name of God, don't complicate this simple program with Freudian matters. In the name of God, keep this program simple. And I see so many people in AA today trying to reconstruct what the message is. And it's very, very sad because people are dying behind it. I see so many people that desperately reach out to me and say, can you please show me how to do the first step? Please? And you know what? It's simple. You want to know how simple it is? I look at the drunk across the table from me. I go, you alcoholic? And they go, yep. I can look back at them and say, first step's done. You know why? Because they admitted it. They didn't have to write shit. I think if I had to write down the first step, it probably would have killed me because it would have taken too long for me to get to that second step, which was a freeing step, which told me, hey, maybe there is a God and maybe he has a better plan for an idiot like me. But see, I see so many people that want to replace the second step with Prozac. What they think is going to happen, hey, you think I'm kidding? You think I'm kidding? But this is the truth. See, there's three things that we'll all have in common for the rest of our lives if we're alcoholic like me, right? We have a mental obsession to drink, right? It's called a phenomenon of craving, right? We are bodily and mentally different from our fellows, right? And the other thing is that we have a spiritual malady. Those are the three things of alcoholism that are tied down to being alcoholic. But what happens is that a doctor will diagnose the alcoholic, and the first thing that an alcoholic's going to do is tell him a lie, right? How are things going? Pretty bad. You know? And I'm not saying that depression doesn't exist. But what I'm saying is that I see a lot of people with, like, 30 days sober, and they're looking at me going, yeah, I'm on Prozac. You know? And he's going, great! And he goes, but I'm really depressed. I'll say, how's your checking account? Pretty bad. You know, working? Nope. Just got off of drugs and alcohol? Yep. How's your family life? It sucks. I'd be depressed too. You know? Anyways. So, you know, you might want to give yourself a little more time before you jump in there with a chemical solution. You might want to just write it out and try those 12 steps for the full time and then tell me what happens after a year. But anyways, you know, so my life in high school and everything else was blown apart, and I had very little hope. My dad was betting tough on me. So what happened was I needed to change, and I stole a girl, and I went to Colorado Springs, Colorado with this girl. They had an APB across California and Nevada for us, but they didn't know that I had enough gas money to get us to Colorado, you know? So we went to Colorado, and certainly you got to be drunk to do something like this. What I did was illegal, and what I did was wrong. But at the time, you're just crazy enough to believe your own crap. So there I am, stuck in Colorado. I got no money, no family, and just basically decided to do whatever I could to survive. I became a vegetable slicer and a kickboxer, and and that's what I did, you know. And I hung out there for 8 months, and while I was there in that 8 month period of time, I figured out how to con a judge. Guys getting this, to marry us. And we got married. And I came back into Saratoga, and I had a little bit of money saved up and everything, and I got a house on Las Encinas Court off of Pollard Road in the Los Gatos Estates, set up sticks and made ourselves look right, and got my old job back at Dysan Corporation, and away we went. And I thumbed my nose up at all my parents, her parents, everybody else, and fought my way out of that corner. You know what? And the fight was on, believe me. Well, it was funny, but I became addicted to alcohol at this time. I think that truly was the point where, man, there was no turning back. I absolutely loved alcohol, needed alcohol, but this is the third phase of drinking, and it was a long phase for me, but this is the third phase. It's called nothing but trouble. And that's what had happened in my life, is that it went from fun to fun and trouble to nothing but trouble. Well, in our third year of marriage, my ex-wife's uncle was killed. And by him being killed, and it was directly tied to alcohol and drugs, it blew our marriage apart. And it threw me into an insane drunk that I can't believe I came out of. But by the time I was basically landing, I was living in a tent in South Lake Tahoe at the El Dorado campsite, hanging out, being as cool as you possibly can be. It's kind of tough to do. And, you know, life was not going well. I believe that alcoholism is absolutely a disease. Absolutely. And I think it's incurable, but I think that you can arrest it through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and an absolute relationship with God. I absolutely believe that. There's no one in this room that can convince me different. No one. I can remember calling my mother from the El Dorado campsite and telling her it's cold, you know, and her saying, well, why don't you stop drinking? And I'm telling her, I am. I have like a six-pack a day. I mean, I was like way down, you know? And she goes, well, how are you doing with that drug problem? I said, I am not doing coke. I'm doing crank, you know? But, you know, I mean, just absolutely mentally twists you, and it won't let go of you, and it never will, unless the bonds are broken through a spiritual solution. I believe that's the only way out. Well, I'm going to go into the back half of my drinking, because I'd rather go into the solution and the rest of it and share it with you from a more positive note. But I'd been in the Navy for a time, and I had been a part of the teams, Special Forces teams, And I had done very well in there for, you know, a year or so. And the relationships that I had in there were very strong. And what I did in there was important to me while I was in there. A guy was killed in training. And it was just enough of an excuse for me to go do a UA jaunt down into Ensenada. And I went on a drunken binge. Next thing I knew, I was in a fight with a lieutenant that was sent down there to arrest me. And I beat him within a half inch of his life. And I swam the coast of Mexico back up and then got into San Diego. And I turned myself into the MPs and told them where the guy was, you know. And next thing I knew, I was standing in front of the captain explaining myself to him and him saying, you know what, I think you need psychiatric evaluation. Next thing I knew, I was standing there with orange styrofoam slippers on with smiley faces, and I was wrapped in a paper mache robe, and I'm cut, you know, I am cut up. And I'm looking at these guys, and I'm thinking, I'm coming out, you know. And I wasn't coming out, you know. They weren't going to let me out, you know. So I had to really, really figure out how to calm down. And that's really a bummer. Hey, what are you laughing at? This is sad. You know, everybody be depressed with me. You know, so there I am trying to figure out how to convince some very, very advanced psychiatrist that I'm okay. So there they are. They're evaluating me, and they're asking me, "Are you suicidal?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Are you homicidal?" I said, "Sometimes." You know? "But I'm getting better, and it's because of you." You know? And, you know, the biggest thing I was worried about is that they were going to put me on lithium, and then you know, I'd really go crazy, you know? So it took me about 3 weeks of going through this enormous change in attitude to get me out of there. They got me out of there. And then the teams wanted me back in. I wanted out, and we settled. And they let me go. I had to pay a fine of $10,000. I cut them a check for $8,000, and I owed them $2,000 up until the time that I got into AA. It was terrible. The guilt that was tied to me. But believe me, when I got to AA, I didn't owe $2,000. I owed about $80,000. Right? When I got to AA, a lot of damage had been done. Anyways, I'm on the street. I got all this special forces training. I got no money, and I decide what I need to do is get back home. And the guy that I went home to is in the room tonight. You know, the guy that would give me cover, and if I was in jail and he couldn't get me out, he'd get in there with me. You know, that's the kind of buddies I got. You know, but anyway, so I'm stuck in Simi Valley, and I call this guy and I go, "Mike, I need $40," and he goes, "Johnny, you're going to drink it. I'll send you 20. And I said, "All right, send me 20. So Western Union, go down there, stand in front of Western Union. The guy goes, "Looking at your ID, it doesn't look anything like you because you're all strung out." You know? And there you go. He gives me my $20, right? I go over to the Toyota lot, and I look at these guys, and I said, "I'm interested in that truck over there." Guy says, "Beautiful. Let's take it for a test drive." And I said, "Beautiful. Let's do it." And we get in the truck. I said, drive's nice. Okay, let's bring it back. I switched keys on him. Didn't see it, but I saw it because I got it. And and I looked at him. I said, "I need a day to think about this. But I'm going to come back and I'm going to buy that truck." Well, that night I went in and I stole that truck. I jumped it over a display lawn and I took that $20 and I slung it into the gas tank and I burned straight. Does this sound alcoholic to you at all? Just a tad? How do I look, all right? You know? Well, you know, so there I am committing felonies for no apparent reason. And I'm driving down, and all I want to do is get, what are you laughing at? I'm going to Los Gatos. I got a plan, you know. Well, I get to Bakersfield, and I'm out of gas, and I got a leather jacket and a dive watch. So I walk in the guy, and I said, "My mother's dying, and my grandmother's waiting for me. Will you take these for some gas?" Guy looks at me and says, no. I said, it's a deal. And I threw the stuff on the thing, and I pumped the gas, and I pull up into Saratoga, and I look at this guy, and I go, hey, look at my new truck. He goes, where'd you get it? I said, I stole it. You stole it? Oh, my God. You got to get rid of it. So I go through Los Gatos, and I'm trying to sell. The cops find out that there's a vehicle in town that's up for sale, you know, and they put a couple guys on it, you know, but I stole it back and took it to San Diego and I sold it. And then once I got my money, because I was lucky, I went to Vegas. Sound alcoholic? So get to Vegas and just burn as much money as I can, and I'm just crazy, and I finally realized, you're not going to stop, and you're going to die behind drinking. I could feel it. My body was literally to the point where I'd have to. You can't just sit up in bed anymore. You got to kind of like roll and adjust so your kidneys and everything flow at the right time. And you get out, you know, and you stand in the shower, and you go, God, the water even hurts. And you know, I knew that something bad was going to happen. So I knew my dad was an AA. I went to him. I said, Dad, save me. I'm an alcoholic. I finally admitted it. I'm ready for those 12 steps. He looked at me and said, beautiful. We're going to put you into a detox center because you need it. And they put me into East Pittsburgh detox. And I'm sitting in there, and I'm looking at all these guys going, you got any money or anything? And I go, no. And they go, well, you're going to sleep over there. And I felt really weird, you know, because I grew up in Saratoga, and here I am in East Pittsburgh trying to explain myself, you know. I also want you to know I went to jail a lot. You know, anybody that's ever gone to jail, which probably none of you have because you've been, you know, careful about what you do, you know, you notice most people that are alcoholic are very careful. You know, I got a record that's beautiful, you know. It shows all kinds of things. Drunk and driving, drunk in public, resisting arrest, assault with a deadly weapon. I mean, a few things that you can overcome with a spiritual solution. Now, so I got out of that situation, and I'm in this detox center, and everybody's passing on that spiritual solution, plus I need some money from you so you can really stay sober. And I want you to know, I think that's all load of crap, by the way. AA is for free and for fun. If anybody tells you any different, you know, tell them that they're doing BB. And if you don't know what BB is, I don't either, but it's AAA. You know, I love AA for what it is. AA is a very, very, very simple program. When somebody looks at you and says, have you taken a drink today? And you say, no. That's where the miracle starts, because guys like you and I, ladies like you and her, should not take another drink for as long as we live if your past is as sordid as mine or anywhere close, you know. But I didn't get it. You know, I didn't get it. I didn't do the steps. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't get the big book. I didn't do anything. I just hung for 90 days. And when I got out of there, I broke out in felonies again. you know, it's just sad, you know. Well, I had my last drunk on December 27th. Actually, 26th through the 27th of 1990. And I'm going to tell you about that. What happened was, I was down on my luck, like most drunks. And I had nowhere to go, and I was working at this terrible job, but I'd sold something, and I had $3,000 coming to me. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the guy that I work for is looking at me, and he's saying, boy, you're great, and it's wonderful having you work with us, and what a great attitude you have. And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, give me the check. Just give me the check, you know? So finally, after about 15 minutes, the guy slides that check across the table, grabbed that check, and said, hey, good to see you, talk to you later, bye-bye, right? And I race down to Wells Fargo, and I skid into the side of the parking lot, and I come in, you close? No, I like to deposit $100. And I don't know if any of you guys, what are you laughing at? So I get my cash, you know, because cash is king in my neighborhood, And I run down to Penny's place, and I tell everybody, drinks on Johnny, man. And they're like, hey, Johnny, how are you? There was four of them there, you know. And, you know, and And we start drinking, you know, we're drinking through the night, and there's more and more people coming in. Drinks on Johnny, and I'm feeding my ego, because you know why? I'm lonely. I'm so lonely. I'm so scared. I'm so depressed. I can't tell you what it's like to be just ripped, snorting, and torn across the side of the USA and back again and have no explanation for why you've been or why you come. And you're standing there trying to be a part of something because there's nothing left to hang on to. And you're sitting there and you're standing next to all these people that you'd rather not be standing next to. But you'll settle because there's no one else that'll take you. You know? And I can remember standing there, and this guy's about 11:30 at night or so. He goes, "Hey, can you get some booger sugar?" And I said, "Yeah, I can. Sure, man. Give me your money, you know." And I get up to the top into Scotts Valley, and I go see this guy, man, and this guy's got tons. And I say, "Give me 2 ounces, you know." And I said, "What's that?" He goes, "That's a Nosetol." I said, "Okay, well, give me an ounce of that." And I go, "Okay, now if I put an ounce of that into this, they won't know, right?" He goes, I said, "Okay, shake it up, man. I got my ounce, you know." And I'm sitting there, I'm drunk. I want you to know, I never just said, "Just doing blow tonight," you know. Man, whiskey's good for you if you do it right, you know. You know, so I'm there, and the guy's looking at me, goes, "You okay?" I said, "I'm fine, man." And I jumped into my tempo because that's the kind of biker I was, and I raced back down to Penny's place, right? And I get down there, and my mother co-signed for the car. By the way, I don't want to take anything out of my story because it's just sick enough to make the rest of you guys relate. And so there I am, and I look at Eddie, and Eddie looks at me, and he goes, "You coming in?" I said, "I'm going home." And that was way, way unlike me because I'd use you 10 times over before I let you have mine, you know. And I just looked at him and I said, "No, here you go." And I tossed him his bag and it got off easy, you know. And I got mine and I raced down to the liquor store, or no, Safeway, and I bought me 20 lighters, some deionized water, some tin foil, some baking soda. You know, normal purchase, you know. And I'm looking at the guy. And the guy's looking at me. I'm gritting my teeth. He's going, "You're not on him, dog." Yeah. You know? And I get my stuff out of there, you know? And I jump in my tempo, and I race down to the liquor store, and I buy a fifth of Southern Comfort, a case of Molson Gold, a case of Heineken, and a stack of pornographic material that any man would be proud of. And there I go, you know, off into the sunset. And now there you go. Now you're catching on. It's, hey, you know, I'm going to party all by myself. You know, it's all for me. You know? So there I am. Now, see, I'm supposed to be back at work at 9 o'clock in the morning. But it's funny. And here's a sad thing is that I was in that car for 36 hours. 36 hours. And there I was at 30 hours, and I was looking into that mirror. And it's funny. When you're that loaded, you start asking yourself questions like, "I wonder what my mom's doing." Or you'll ask a question like, "I hope God will forgive me for this." You'll put yourself, stuff will come to your mind like, "I don't know what I'm going to do," right? And these questions were hammering me while I'm sitting there and I'm taking hits and I'm looking in the mirror and I'm flipping through those magazines and I'm spilling shit on me and the radio's tuned in just right. And all of a sudden, I did a self-evaluation. We call it a fourth step here, you know, fearless moral inventory. Some of you have taken it, some of you haven't. But there I am, "You shouldn't do this drunk." And I'm looking at myself and I said, "You know what you should do is die, because you'll never amount to anything. You're taking up space. You have absolutely ruined your reputation, and there's no hope for you." So I can remember looking at this pipe and shaping it just right so it could hold half gram and whole gram hits. And there I am, I'm sitting there, and I'm taking these hits, and as I'm taking the hits, I'm watching my eyes go back, and I'm holding those hits, trying to seize my heart. That's all I wanted. There's one nice little pop. And that would be it, you know? I could check out. Wouldn't have to ever face any of you ever again, and I could lay my head to rest. Sad story, isn't it? But see, the deal here is that God has a sense of humor, even for a pig like me. God loves me. That's the message tonight, if you haven't gotten it. God loves me, and if God loves me, He must love you. Because He cannot just love one. He either loves them all or he doesn't love anybody. And I want you all to know here tonight, we are loved and we are protected. But we're not the chosen ones. We're not. What we are is we're an instrument. We're an enormous, enormous movement of spirituality that's moving towards God's grace, God's plan. I have a feeling. So there it is, December 27th. I'm trying to kill myself in the middle of a parking lot of a church in front of the cross. And it's just about as low as it goes for me. And I had no hope left. Well, 4 days after I got dry, I was at an AA meeting, fighting for my life, hanging on for dear life. Nothing but nothing but nothing would fix Johnny. Nothing. Especially the void that was in the middle of my chest. And there was a man that was speaking from the podium. His name's Jim Bayard. Some of you hate him. Some of you love him. I'll let you know, I love him. Jim Bayard was standing from a podium and he was looking out at a crowd similar to this and he said, "I haven't had handcuffs on these All-American wrists in over 20 years. And at that moment, as he said that, I was flashing back to 6 nights ago. I had cops beating me over the side of the head and trying to get my hands behind my back, and I'm locking my lats out saying, 'Come on, cop, drive, drive!' You know? And these guys, you know, they take you serious when you do that shit, you know? Anyways, I'm flashing back on this because you can do that when you're, like, really new in sobriety. So Jim's passing this message on. And then, you know, as he's kind of wrapping up, he says, "You know, if there's anybody new here tonight, I pray you don't get as bad as that guy." And he's pointing at me. And see, I'm an ex-Navy SEAL. And I'm looking at this guy and I'm thinking, "You're dead." And I'm upset about it, but there's something different about my attitude. All of a sudden I'm thinking, you know, hey, if you drink, you're dead, you know? So I go up to this guy and I grab him and I said, I'm going to drink. And he looked at me and said, "Let go of me." And he said, "I'm going to coffee, and that's my car over there." He said, "You can go with me." He goes, "But I want you to, whatever you're in or whatever you're on, I want you 10 car lengths behind me." I said, "Okay." You know, first deal I cut in AA. You know? So I go down to this coffee shop, and this guy's staring across from the table from me. And this is how it went, guys. He looked at me and said, "You alcoholic?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Your life unmanageable?" I said, "I'm living at my mom's." He said, "First step's done." "You think I'm kidding?" Then he looked at me and he said, "You believe in God?" I said, "I hate God." He said, "That's good enough. Second step's done." He said, "You know what, just remember, you might have an alcoholic on your hands that's as bad as me or worse, and maybe this is all he needs is some simplicity instead of all this complex shit that's running around AA, so you better focus." Guy looked at me and he said, "Are you willing to turn your life and your will over the care of God?" And I said, "I don't know." And he said, "You have to, otherwise you're going to die drunk." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "Let's read this." And he read, "God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, so that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, so that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always." He said, "Are you willing to do that?" I said, "I guess." He said, "Third step's done." Then he immediately ran down the page and he said, "You know, if you don't follow this with a fourth step immediately, it'll have little lasting effect and you may drink again, so you must do it immediately." And I listened to him and I went home and I did my fourth step and I came back and I lied all over it. I want you to know I lied all over it. I really did. But I got a couple truths that were really eating at me right in between all those lies, and I slung them straight at him. And he was kind enough to listen to me. And let me tell you, I never got that in a bar. And I'll share something with you. A member of Alcoholics Anonymous was born because there was just enough pressure off that pressure valve that went just enough to back me up and say, maybe I'll try it one more day. Maybe I'll go one more day. I probably won't because I probably can't, but I'll try it one more day. So there I am hanging out with this old beat-up trucker that's talking shit to everybody. And all of a sudden I'm finding out, hey, this is probably the wrong guy because he's making me look bad. You know? But the bottom line is, if that guy had 20 years and I had 5 days, right? 5 days. I have a guy in here tonight that I sponsored that has 5 days. And I want you to know you never have to drink again. You never have to feel that way ever again. And you can join us tonight. You never have to turn back. The heat's on. Let's go. Put your boots on. God's calling. You know? So, so it's funny. But Jim looked at me and goes, I like to go to AA conventions. What about you? I said, I love them. He goes, great, because we're going to a lot of them. I said, okay. And that, you know what? I hate to tell you, but that's about all there was to this guy's start in sobriety, was making a commitment. And I mean to the death commitment, that I will never, ever, ever, ever turn back. I'll do anything, please, anything. Do not have me take another drink, because it was just bad enough for me to never go back. I don't ever, ever, ever want to go back. I want you guys to know that. But I know that I can only do that on a daily basis. I know that. That's all I can swing. I'm just not capable. Two places at one time. I'm never really, don't have the potential to plan too much anything. Although I have a future and I have goals, and that's what I'm going after today. I love my sponsor. My sponsor is my mentor in sobriety and Alcoholics Anonymous. I will follow him until he's dead, and let me tell you what, if I die before him, I'll die a happier man, because he was part of my life and he showed me how to live the way I live today. If he passes before me, believe me, I'm going to pass it on the way he taught me to pass it on, which is simply. That's all there is to it. I won't complicate things with you. Is amazing. And not drink. You know, I can remember in my early days of sobriety, I went 5 months, 5 months without working. And let me tell you, I love money. It turns out I'm in America, and America requires you to have money. And if you're not a capitalist, get out, because it's really going to go bad for you. You know? But, so, you know, I really, really, really wanted to have some money. And I couldn't get a job because people didn't trust me. People didn't think I could hang once I did get the job. So it took me 5 months of going to AA meetings with Danny and with this whole room is loaded with people that saved my life. Just loaded with people that wrapped their arms around me and said, I got you, baby. One more day. We'll get it together. Let's go. So 5 months, just nothing but nothing but nothing. And I started questioning God. I'm going to answer a big question for everybody. Everybody's going, a lot of people ask me, I don't know what God's will is for me. I don't know. And then their lip comes out with it. Like that, you know? And I look at it and I go, what, are you kidding me? I'll tell you what God's will for you is. Do your best. That's it. It's simple. You know, if you want some complicated, you know, plan, you know, go somewhere else. This is a simple program. So God's will for me is to do my best and to stay sober and carry my primary purpose wherever I go, which is the principles of AA, which is to stay sober and help the other alcoholic achieve sobriety. And you know, my sponsor insists that I do that. He insists it. I hate that. He makes fun of me. If I'm not sponsoring somebody, he looks at me and goes, so you're sucking off the back of AA, are you? You know, or geez, you're resting on your laurels, John. Or, you know, but he doesn't get a chance to say that too much to me these days because I'm interested in staying sober until the day I die. I am. My life today is amazing. Flat out amazing. Do you guys remember the first thing I told you in this talk? Well, I got to AA, I own blanket, right? Right? You remember that? Okay, well, today I'm the vice president of international OEM sales for a publicly traded company. I'm on the board of directors of another publicly traded company. I sponsor maybe 10 or 15 guys at a time, I don't know, in and out, round and round, here we go. You know, I'm married to a woman that I love with all my heart. And she loves me back just the same. I have two dogs. I own my own house. My mother calls me for advice. My sister Lori has four children and she's divorced. And don't tell anybody this, but I send her money to make sure she makes it. And, you know, I just, I don't know what to tell you other than the fact that I quit the Tough Guys Club, I joined AA, and I became a servant to God. You know, but, you know, there's an out clause that's here for all of you if you're worried about whether I'm a saint or not, and it goes like this. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. And that's basically, whenever I screw up in AA, and I do a lot, I do, man. If you ever want to hear the rumor mill and kind of tap into it, I'm out there somewhere, you know. That's all right, though, you know what? If you don't got arrows in your back, you ain't playing the game, are you? You know? So, you know, the point is that I found out that it's important for you to remain involved with AA even when you hate it. And you're to reach out and let somebody know, I love you. You're supposed to reach out and tell somebody, I can tell you need a spot, and I'm going to be your spot. I've done that a few times in my sobriety. I was thinking about Jesus Christ today. I was thinking about this guy that hit the face of the earth that everybody denies, but at the same time, nobody can deny him because he was there, man. There's just nothing you can do about it. Too many people talking about it. And there's a point in his life where he walked out onto an area, and there was a multitude of people down below him. And he said, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are the sorrowful, they shall be comforted. Blessed are the ones who seek God, for they shall be fulfilled. You know, this type of message is the type of message that I pray is available for me in AA. I pray that, you know, because if I don't have some type of goodness being poured towards me, there will be nothing attractive in AA, right? And this is a program of attraction, isn't it? Isn't that what this is about? It's not about whether I can top you with time, right? It's not about that, is it? Because any one of us is susceptible to slipping, you know, and I don't believe in slipping, by the way. I think that's a plan, you know. But, you know, and that's why I come to AA. You know, I want you to know there's no other reason that I'm here tonight than to share my sobriety with you and to get a little feedback from you. I'll tell you something that was just amazing to me was the amount of people that came up to me and hugged me and said, yeah, I drove out here to listen to you tonight. How many people came up to me and said, bring them a little spirituality, Johnny, they need it. How many people came up to me and said, I love you. Right on, man. You know, I never got that in jail. Very, very seldom anyway. Yeah. You know? You know? Let me tell you right now. There's nothing but nothing that anybody here in this room could offer me for my sobriety. There's nobody here that could trade me anything for it. Nobody. It's the most important thing in my life. My sponsor taught me very, very good four priorities in life to follow. And he says the bottom two switch most of the time. But he said, the number one thing in your life for the rest of your life, no matter what, will be your commitment to sobriety. There will be nothing else. That is it. Every time you think, I need to get a car, you got to think, I need to stay sober, and then get a car, you know? Because here's how it works. Sobriety first, God second, and then your commitment to responsibility third, and then going after your relationships with family and others after that. And the reason he explained it to me this way was that If you're sober, you can have a relationship with God. If you're sober and have a relationship with God, you can become responsible. If you're sober, have a relationship with God, and are responsible, you can have your relationships back with your family and friends. And see, it was pretty simple. I could count to four. And I went, all right, so you're saying to me, sober, and then God, and then I got to like pay my bills, pay my taxes, go to work, make sure the air's in the tires and brakes are all right and gas, and then after that I can go hang out with Mom. And he goes, yeah, basically go do that and go do it away from me, you know. And and that's basically, that's the thing. I got to touch on one other thing and then I'll close. Is there a big book in the house? Here's one. I got one right here. But anyways, you know, I have a lot of people that come up to me and they go, you know, my sponsor says I can't date in the first year of my sobriety. Or, you know, my sponsor says I have to break up with my girlfriend because she's, you know. And usually what I tell those guys is that, you know, geez, this is America. And when I look at your ID here, it says you're 33. That means that you can have sexual relationships with anything. You know? And still stay sober, you know? It just is not our business, you know? My sponsor taught me that sponsorship is about being a great example of sobriety and making it attractive, you know? I don't have to promote shit to you guys. I don't have to go, oh, come on, go to a meeting with me. Come on, it's going to be great. It's going to save your life. Come on, you know? If you want to drink, drink. Gonna miss you, you know? Make room for the guys that want it. Make room for the people that will absolutely knock down, drag out, fight for it because it means their lives. Give it to those guys. If you don't want to be here, blow out, man. Gonna miss you. That's just the way it is, you know? That's the law of the jungle, isn't it? And it is a jungle out there, isn't it? All right. Well, I want you to know that I love my sobriety, if you can't tell. I may be drunk tomorrow if I don't continue to work in AA instead of around AA. I've been told that's my job, you know. So anyways, I love these last two paragraphs. They're on page 164. And the reason I love them is because they tell me, and this is for you, but they tell me that I don't have to be embarrassed about being an alcoholic. They tell me that it's okay to be a drunk and be sober. They tell me that I can join with you guys in the walk of sobriety. And they go something like this. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. These guys were smart. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. Freely! We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, what we're in right now at this moment. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.